Today is July 5th, 2018, and this is episode number 469 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm currently obsessed. I mean, it just will not leave my head, the song The Trial from Pink Floyd's The Wall. It just nonstop, all the parts, all the voices. It's going right now. The evidence before the court is, I mean, it just won't stop.
I can appreciate that. I mean, the Wall is an amazing album.
It was in fact an amazing album. So to get the full story, we cover this, but I mean, it just won't leave my head, man. It is like just become the biggest earworm of all time. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM if you'd like to comment on anything about the show. Shoot us a note over at facebook.com/groups/apparently Pink Floyd fans. No, wait. facebook.com/groups/context machine.
Oh, right. That one works, too. Yeah, that's a really good album.
It's remember. A good album. I've always liked that song, but it's for days now. For days. Like, I'm going to sleep with it, and I'm waking up with it. And I'm sitting here dumb reading, and, you know, Judge starts coming out of my mouth. It's just... Anyway.
You sure it's your mouth? I mean, yeah. You remember the movie?
I do.
So just making sure it's your mouth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a boom, 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 boom. That's, I think we're done now.
Yeah. So I guess it's true. We all are just another brick in the wall.
That is true. The App Store turned 10.
Oh, happy birthday, App Store.
Yeah, the App Store turns 10 years old, man. Wow.
Since we're going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first app you bought?
No.
I do. It was, I don't remember the exact name. Was it Super Monkey Ball? The one where you had to tilt your iPhone and the ball would go across, the maze, and if you tilted too far, the ball would roll off. You'd have to start over. It was a monkey, not a ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that one. And then Doodle Jump.
Doodle Jump came a lot later.
It wasn't a lot later. What are you talking about a lot later?
I'm just making that part up. I remember getting it a lot later.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry. I didn't clarify. That came a lot later for me.
Fair enough. And this, like, literally just crossed our desk here. Apple's promoting it. They've got this little animated Jiffy thing.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember being so frustrated with that game.
Which one? Super Monkey Tilter Ball?
Yeah. Because you'd overcompensate once, and now it just escalates, and then you're screwed.
Well, it took developers a while to master this accelerometer crap.
Well, and apparently I never did. The other one I bought was like right at the same time was Cro-Mag Rally. Those are the two games that Apple showed off, and so I went and bought them both so I could have these games on my iPhone.
Yeah. What was the developer behind Cro-Mag Rally? They were a Big Mac game developer for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, man. They did a lot of really awesome games.
They did a lot of original Mac games. And you look at the state of Mac gaming today, and it's like
Pangea.
Pangea. Yeah. Good guys.
Yeah.
And state of Mac gaming today kind of seems like it's back to 2005, despite the fact that, we're selling far more Macs in a single quarter.
Yeah.
Than Apple would sell in a year back then. It's kind of weird.
I just went to the Pangea website because I had no idea if they're still around. And their website, at least as of 2015, was still active. Is that, that's what the copyright is.
Yeah, I think they did make an announcement about they were getting out of either Mac development and focusing exclusively on iOS development. It's Pangea Software, right?
It's PangeaSoft.net. I'm looking at these games and
oh, but yeah, Brian Greenstone retired, 2016. He retired.
Yeah,
he was the developer behind Pangea. He was the big boss.
They had some cool games. I remember. So
2016. He retired.
Do you remember when Bugdom and Nanosaur were just like included with Max?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's. I don't know. So, all right. Well, let's actually use this to transition into our first actual topic.
Oh, okay.
Crazy idea. So we have five new Macs and five new iPads being registered by Apple with a regulatory body in Europe with the Eurasian Economic Commission.
All right.
So this was a French site Consumac first noted it, and then VentureBeat actually picked it up, and we haven't even written about it yet. It's another hot off the press,
yeah,
story. So here's the thing though, the iPads are registered with iOS 11 as their operating system, not iOS 12. And the Macs were registered with High Sierra as their operating system, not Mojave.
All right.
Therefore,
we will be getting new Macs and new iOS devices before the new versions of macOS and iOS ship this fall.
Yes.
Huh. All right. Well, I'm finding that fascinating. On the iOS devices, we've had reports just recently that in iOS 12, there is code that lets the iPad use an emoji. So that would indicate a FaceTime camera or, excuse me, a true depth camera on the iPad.
But right.
But these features are available in iOS 12, not iOS 11. So are we getting new iPads that have hardware that's capable of doing stuff, but we won't get to use those hardware features until iOS 12 comes out?
That is possible. It's also going in a million different directions with this, because it does seem weird that Apple would release new iPads before iOS 12 was announced, unless, of course, they actually want to save the iOS 12 release for iPhone, bandwidth, right? They have enough going on with iPhones that they really want the focus to be on iPhones and not iPads, which is fine. Give me more new products. Faster. That's great. Please do that. But it does seem weird that they would release new iPads just a month before iOS 12 is announced or is released, or a month or two, I should say, before iOS 12 is released.
Yeah, it does. I suppose that would be a way to let people beta test the hardware features, although that just seems like a weird thing, too.
Yeah, but Apple could say, "Hey, we're announcing these things, and when iOS 12 is released,
then you get these features."
You get these features. I can't recall if Apple's ever done that before.
It sounds very familiar, but I can't say for sure.
I guess they've done it in reverse, right? Where features in iOS 11 were waiting for the iPhone 10 to be released. I can't recall a time when we've gone the other way, where hardware was released waiting for
software.
Waiting for the software.
Yeah.
And we didn't do any research for this show because, you know, ACM.
Well, the great thing is we have listeners who are so on top of this stuff. Someone's going to let us know
if, that's true.
If it's actually happened.
Yeah. Probably proceeded with an LOL noobs.
Probably.
It seems appropriate at the very least.
Yeah, well, it's certainly expected.
All right, so we've got these Macs. Now, the thing about new Macs is, was that ACM last week where I was whining about new Macs? I know. Probably. I've done some whining lately. I had dinner with Mark Fuccio this week.
Oh, nice.
I know he and I were lamenting the lack of new Macs, and I can't remember if we did it on the show too. I mean, like 2017 was so full of promise with new Macs. With, you know, we had like new MacBooks, and then new MacBooks again after only 9 months, and it was like super exciting. And then, you know, we just, like, it's been more than a year since any new Macs have been released or announced.
Are there processors that are out in quantity that would be worth Apple putting into new Macs?
There's stuff going on. They could release new frickin' Macs. I mean, yeah, there have been processors faster than what's available in the MacBook Pro since before the MacBook Pro was last released. Right? There are 6-core mobile Intel processors out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Right. And, you know, yeah, we didn't get them. And there's certainly been plenty of video card upgrades happening over the last year. Give us new Macs, Apple. Give us some new freaking Macs, man.
Well, maybe
make the new Macs. Like every year, make the new Macs. It just seems, I mean, just do that. Hire some people. You got some money, right? You know, let's have some new Macs.
They don't have to be
like mind-bogglingly new devices every year. Just give us some iterations, man. And for the love of God, stop charging full price for the 58-year-old Mac Mini. I mean, come on. What's that about, man?
Brian, come on. You're exaggerating. 57 and a half.
Okay, it's so embarrassing that they sell that. I mean, it's embarrassing that they sell the Mac Pro, but it's even more embarrassing that they sell the Mac Mini. Same price.
Yeah, the same price thing for the Mac Mini to me is just so weird.
It's so offensive. It's just so insulting.
Yeah, it almost feels like. And I'm certain this isn't what Apple's doing, but it just feels like Apple is laughing, saying, look at this. People are so stupid that they'll buy a 4-year-old computer for today's price.
Yeah, LOL. LOL noobs.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So we do have this. We have this this new rumor, though. It's not even a rumor. It's a filing.
It's a filing, so...
Right, so I'm quoting from VentureBeat. On July 4th, Apple registered new... That would be yesterday. Holiday, mind you. Here in the States, but not there.
But not there.
In Europe. On July 4th, Apple registered new tablets with model numbers, blah, blah, blah. Each listing iOS 11 is their operating system. Apple also registered personal computers with model numbers... A1931, A1932, which obviously seem like two versions of the same kind of device. And then there's A1988 and 1989 and 1990. And these also all have macOS High Sierra. So it really does seem like we can get some kind of event, some kind of announcement, maybe an event in July or August.
Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, which fits nicely with what you were hoping Apple would do, which is give us new computers soon.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, so it seems like only two product lines are going to be updated. And it would seem like that, I would guess that would be MacBook Pro and iMac. So iMac Pro isn't going to be updated? Super Pro. That's Super Pro to keep selling the same thing they introduced a year ago. Super Pro. That's like what pro. What, you know what pros do? They say, "Hey man, I wish there was some way that I could pay top dollar for last year's technology. That'd be super pro."
Oh yeah. I'm just picturing it, and oh my god. Yeah.
Or it could be the other way around. It could be three models of MacBook and two iMacs. I mean, the iMac is well overdue for a bump too.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, iMac Pro is overdue. And we're not even getting into to Mac Pro. I mean, we've been told that's coming later.
Right. And it's not coming this year.
It's supposed to be coming next year. So, I mean,
that's what people are speculating. Apple has not committed.
Well, I thought that Phil said something like 2019 at the earliest, or that was something that,
at the earliest
Panzer.
Yeah. 2019 at the earliest. And a lot of people have conflated that into the new Mac Pro shows up in 2019.
Right. Well, it's really hard to design things. You have to put like circuits and stuff together.
That's true. And you have to figure out how to put square things in round bodies. And
right. And don't get me wrong. I can't do it. But if I had $200 billion at my disposal, I could find some people that could.
That's a pretty safe bet.
Right. If I had $200 billion at my disposal, I could find some people who could make some new Macs every year. I could do it.
I believe.
I mean, you could. The PC companies managed to somehow do it.
Yeah, actually, that's true. When it comes to new high-end computers rolling out on a regular basis, HP is tromping all over Apple.
All over Apple. Dell is tromping all over Apple.
That just hurts.
I mean, it does just hurt. Dell.
Michael Dell. All right, on the iPad thing.
Yeah.
What I'm expecting now is that we get partial features with these new iPads until iOS 12 rolls out. So we'll get them. We can use Face ID right away, but we'll get Animoji on the iPads.
Why not? Apple could just make a version of iOS 11 where Animoji is supported on the iPad. Duh. I mean, Animoji is supported in iOS 11. So they could clearly support it on the iPad if they wanted to. And they certainly have done their own model-specific versions of operating systems before.
Mm-hmm. And what they've done with iOS 12 is add in everything they need so that that Animoji can work with an iPad. The extra code isn't in iOS 11.
Yeah, but they could stick it in iOS 11. That's what I'm saying.
They could, but at this point, these new iPads are going to come out probably close enough to when iOS 12 launches that it's not worth the money to do
it. They could stick it in. They could stick it in. They've got all the money. They could totally stick it in. There's no way they're releasing new iPads that can't do Animoji, and they're going to. Yeah, I back off what I said before. There's no way they don't include that in the special version of iOS 11.
We'll see. I'm skeptical, but I hope you're right, because it would just feel weird having these new iPads roll out and then Apple to say, and you get the rest of these features in a month or two. But at the same time, I could totally see them doing that.
Nope. Not going to do that. Not going to do that. So I'm stoked. I hope that there's some meat to this particular bones. In the past, this particular regulatory filing has presaged new devices, but it has also not presaged new devices. I believe some new iPhones were registered there that set off speculation about iPhone SE, a new iPhone SE that never came to market.
Yeah, I'm wondering if those are just model numbers for the iPhones that they were going to start building in India.
Right, could be. Yep. Could be. So let's hope. Let's hope. I would love, I wish it was more than five, but let's see what those five are. There's, you know, could be completely misinterpreting these model numbers. Like, for instance, the one with three could be like a version. It could be like a MacBook Air, and then the other one could be MacBook, and then the other one could be MacBook Pro. That'd be great.
That would be very cool. I'd love to see a new MacBook Air come out, because holy crap, that's way too old now.
I kind of doubt it, though. I really think that one would be a MacBook Pro 15 with or without touch bar, and then 13 with or without touch bar, and then a 13 without touch bar. Yeah, I know what I said.
Yeah, I know what you said. Yeah. And it hurts because you're probably right. We're probably not getting a new MacBook Air.
Yeah, probably not, because they're just going to keep selling the same old crappy app, MacBook Air.
Yeah, but the thing is, they know they can.
Man, it's lazy. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it.
I love it when you get worked up like that.
All right. Well, see, we also had this Yelp victory in court, California Supreme Court. And I thought there was something interesting to talk about that.
Okay. It's from what I recall, this is a case where a company, a restaurant or whatever, wanted to get a negative review removed from Yelp. And Yelp,
so close.
So, okay. Then set me straight.
Okay. So it was an attorney, and she had a client who left a negative Yelp review. And the attorney claimed that the review was both false and defamatory. And they won a lower court ruling demanding that she remove it. And she didn't. So they got a an appeals court. They took it up a notch. And this is all at the state level, not the federal level. And the state court said, yep, got to remove that review. And ordered Yelp to remove it since she didn't.
And then Yelp said no.
And Yelp refused to remove it, appealed to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, look, this is a publisher. Publisher can't be forced to remove an opinion. It was a 4-3 ruling. One of the judges, one of the four judges, agreed that Yelp didn't have to do it, but did so for different reasons. So it's a very, very close case. And another court challenge could change it. But the point is that Yelp can't be forced to remove a negative review.
I think that's a good thing, because if they were in a position where they could be forced to remove negative reviews, then whatever perceived value there is in the service is lost. Because anyone that has a negative review, now they'll say it's defamatory and it needs to come down.
Well, I think it's even more pernicious than that, or that the alternative is even more pernicious than that. And so there's two things I wanted to talk about. One was that a lot of reaction that we've seen, like on our Facebook page, not the TMO's Facebook page as opposed to the Context Machine Facebook group, is that, you know, screw Yelp, they're awful or whatever, something like that. You know, fine, people are welcome to their opinion about Yelp. But that's not the point here. The Yelp specificness of this is not the point. The point here is whether people with money who can hire attorneys can keep negative reviews off of social media. That's the issue. And according to this California Supreme Court ruling, and again, so the plaintiff could appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, mm-hmm. which may or may not agree to accept the case if they do. But at least here in California, and California law, obviously a lot of these companies are operating, mm-hmm. you know, because Silicon Valley, and the principle here is not Yelp. The principle here is whether or not people with money can keep negative opinions about them out of social media. And that was the path that this case could have taken us down. And that's a problem when we, my biggest concern is that companies and the wealthy can generally afford better attorneys than the vast majority of people. Put another way, companies and the wealthy can afford attorneys while most people can't. And being able to prove in court that a statement or review, an opinion, is false and defamatory does not necessarily make it false and defamatory. It just means that your lawyers are better.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the issue here. Like negative reviews suck. There are all kinds of problems with Yelp. Although, I mean, quite frankly, do you use Yelp?
No, I don't.
I do sometimes. And I tell you, I weighed, just like Amazon reviews, I wade through the negative reviews to see how ridiculous they are. And if they're not ridiculous, I'll give them credence. And if they are ridiculous, I know not to give them credence.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a fairly easy process to me.
Yeah. Well, of course. It's like when you're reading any review on any product, you need to use your own comprehension skills to actually read what's there and then decide if there's any merit to it.
Right. And regardless of that, again, Yelp is not the issue. The issue here is being able to use the legal system. People with privilege being able to use the legal system to keep negative opinions about them out of social media.
Yeah.
And that is that would just be, in my opinion, would be a terrible thing.
I agree. That would be a horrible thing, because at that point now you've created yet another caste system. And this is the one where people with money get to say what's online, and the people without just have to accept it.
Right.
That just sounds like a horrible setup to me.
That seems like a very, very bad to me too. So as flawed as Yelp is, it's going to remain at least for now in its current form. And, you know, there won't be any ripple effects going to other social media.
I think places that's good.
Too, including Amazon. You know, the same kind of ruling to go after negative reviews on Amazon.
Yep, Amazon, Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Speaking of which, have you seen? I think it's called Churro. Have you seen this? It's the Airbnb for rental cars. So I can rent your car.
Really?
So, yeah.
No, I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that.
I'm not interested in that either. As someone needing to rent a car, or as someone with a car to rent out.
Yeah, I mean, like maintenance. I don't know. Maybe Turo has got that covered. Maybe Turo actually has some sort of nationwide. See if I'm getting this right. If it's even called Turo. Turo car sharing marketplace. Yeah, Turo.com.
This just sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah, it just really, really sounds like a bad idea. even if they do have some sort of nationwide repair kind of thing, I mean, just, you know, people don't.
Yeah, I found the wrong Turo because I'm looking at
Turo.com.
Turo. All right, because I ended up on a medical site. Oh, birth site. Hey.
Plus, you know, like, I mean, like, what are you going to do with my car? What if you're going to commit a crime?
Right. And how many cars are you going to run into and curbs are you going to drive over?
And yeah, the kinds of things that you don't necessarily see, but do damage to your car. I mean, like, it, you know, it's one thing for a house. And I'll be honest, I'm a lot more comfortable in an Airbnb house that has been purchased to be rented than I am in an Airbnb house that is actually someone's home. And I know that's how Airbnb started, but I'm much more comfortable with the someone bought this as an investment and is renting it out through Airbnb. I'm much more comfortable in that particular home.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, I have stayed in Airbnbs where I have a room in someone's home, and it's been fine. But yeah, just overall, I prefer where it's its own standalone place.
Yeah. So anyway, my point being that there's a lot of things that can be done to a car that you may not notice. And so, you know, you can't rely on the review process, user reviews. You can't rely on that process necessarily to ferret out the bad drivers or the bad car owners.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Turo covers you with $1 million liability insurance, and your car is protected against physical damage.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, or you can get your own commercial renter insurance.
I don't know. I'd be interested to they're doing a TV campaign. That's how I found out. Be interested to know if people are interested in this.
I am definitely not. If I need to rent a car, I'm just going to stick with traditional rental channels.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, there's a whole lot of infrastructure that goes in place with the traditional rental car business. Mind you, the traditional rental car business is also under pressure from merely Uber itself, Uber and Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the States. So, I mean, you know, that entire industry is definitely under pressure. But I'd love to hear from people. Like, are you interested in this? You're interested in renting out a car, someone else's car? Interested in, like, you know, if you're going to leave town, letting someone else rent your car?
I want to know what people think, especially because my reaction was, I mean, so strong, so immediately, just a giant nope.
Yeah, you know, but I'm definitely cognizant of being change resistant and being a little bit too knee-jerky. So if someone's got some good perspective on this, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, that'd be great. And now I get why I didn't know about this, because I don't think that it's happening in any cities around me.
Oh.
I'm clicking through their list and, oh, no, it is in Denver. Huh. All right. Well, maybe if I watched regular television every now and then, I'd see a commercial about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Let's see here. We do have another topic.
Oh, do tell.
Oh, yeah. It's another car topic, isn't it?
It is.
Roger Hine sent us email, longtime listener.
Mm-hmm.
Not first time caller. He said, this keeps coming up in various forms and it bugs me, yet you've not addressed it. The future is electric cars, we say. The future is ride sharing, we say. Electric cars have to be charged, which takes time, we don't say. So how does ride sharing keep the electric cars running all the time instead of sitting at your house or workplace recharging when they have to sit to recharge? So let's talk about that first.
Okay.
You have some thoughts?
My thoughts are that actually is an issue that hopefully will be addressed as the infrastructure builds out for recharging cars. If you had asked me 2 years ago, is this even plausible? I would have said no, because there's no place to plug cars in. But I have seen so many charging stations popping up just all over, everywhere. And not just in Boulder, where I know electric cars are like a status symbol, but in a lot of other cities. So that issue is getting addressed, I think, reasonably quickly, because we're seeing a lot more charging stations popping up all over everywhere.
I think we can actually even take a longer term look. We Jeff and I are pretty much on the same page with the idea being that electric cars and ride sharing are the future. But we're talking about the future, right? We're not saying that tomorrow electric cars and ride sharing is going to replace, you know, all your cars are belong to us.
Yeah.
Right. This is something that we're in the process of seeing happen all around us. And part and parcel of that is going to be improvements to battery technology and to charging technology and to availability of charging, et cetera. And quite frankly, I think that the marketplace will figure out how to handle cars charging. And for one thing, they can drive. And it wouldn't be that difficult to at first have attendants who would plug them in. And eventually have that be roboticized. I mean, these are all problems that will be solved in the process of heading to electric cars and ride sharing being the predominant thing.
Now, one way they're addressing that today in Boulder, and they've been doing this for a few years, actually, there are a couple companies that have a fleet of ride sharing cars. And so they have specific parking spaces in various locations where their cars sit. So as an example, I think one of them is called Ego, like E, lowercase e, big G-O, car share. And they have a couple spaces at one of the grocery stores that's near me. And so you use your app, you say, I need the car, it's not reserved for anyone else. You go over, you pick up the car, use it, and when you're done, you either put it back to the same charging location, or you go to one of their other charging locations and, you know, park it there. And that way, the cars always end up at a standard location. They always get charged, because part of the deal is you park the car, you have to plug it back in. And that way, you know where to find a car. It's going to get juiced up.
And there's the third element here. It's not just electric cars, and it's not just ride sharing. It's autonomous vehicles. It's those three things that are coming together. It's those three things that Tim Cook talked about as being an interesting place to be.
Yes.
Autonomous vehicles can, you know, take themselves to the right place.
Yes. Yeah. So with an autonomous car, you can have a fleet where you have several cars that are back at the charging base, and then the rest of them are just out running rounds. And when it's time for them to recharge, they can just drive themselves back home while another car comes off the lot and keeps doing its thing.
Yeah. And so again, especially when the recharging process can be roboticized or automated.
Yeah.
And that will happen.
That case.
Right. So Roger also said, also your ride sharing requires a density level of population, a high density, basically, of population. So it may well work in an urban setting, but how do you translate that to less populated areas? Vast portions of the United States are sparsely populated and spread out. Neither electric cars with limited ranges nor ride sharing will work effectively in these environments. I'd really like to hear how ride-shared electric cars are going to replace F-150s used to commute during the week and blah, 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 and they won't.
Yeah, they won't. That's it. They just won't.
Ride sharing, car ownership is going to remain the highest in rural, less densely populated areas. That will remain much more the norm. I mean, there will come a day when even those areas could be served. But there's still going to be, and there's also still going to be private ownership. Corporations are going to have a lot of their own cars.
Sure.
Right. And the wealthy, of course, will often probably have their own cars. And a lot of companies will have, I say corporations, but also just like a lot of, smaller companies that simply have such a high level of need of their vehicle, they're going to still own cars. But then even then at night, when the companies are closed down, some of their cars might be used in the general pool.
Sure.
So there's going to be places that still own cars. Car ownership is not going to vanish. It's just going to decline. Yep. And it will remain at its highest in rural areas for sure.
I agree with that completely. I know many people that live in urban areas, like cities, not like suburbs, that have either gotten rid of their cars or lament the fact that they haven't been able to get rid of their car yet, and they're looking forward to the day. And they're doing just fine. My car spends at least 90% of its time parked. I mean, there are weeks where I will go out and start up my car and drive it around the block a few times just to make sure everything's still doing what it's supposed to, and then go park it.
I've got a 2012 Chevy Equinox that I bought in 2011. Mm-hmm. And obviously at the end of 2011, I think I took ownership of it in November of 2011. It has 40,780 miles on it.
Wow.
And it is a 7.5 year old car.
Yeah.
And
we
I mean, that's
even talk about my mileage.
Yeah. Your mileage is, you actually have a high mileage vehicle, right?
I do.
But you inherited those miles.
I inherited a lot of those miles. Yeah. I have, I'm going to say it's 260,000 miles on my car right now, but it's a Volvo. So, so it's just now getting broken.
Right. My point is that I don't drive my car a lot. I'm putting a little more than 5,000 miles a year on my car.
Yeah, and I think you're putting more in your car than mine. But part of that's probably because when we've gone to events like CES, you drive there.
Right.
Yeah.
That is true.
There have been times I've gone out to my car where it sat so long that, like with the pollen falling and just junk falling off trees, I actually have to yank on my car door to get it to open because there's so much gunk around the door frame.
That's foul.
Yeah. My car needs a bath again.
But, and despite my low mileage driving, I'm not keen on giving up my car. I do like being able to hop in my car, and I don't like the idea of relying on Uber. I am not philosophically aligned to that yet.
Yeah. And the way things work for me, I can't get rid of my car yet, even though it does sit long enough that the doors stick shut at times. There's just enough that happens in my world where my car needs to be there ready all the time.
Yeah. And the younger people are less resistant to this idea. Older people are much more resistant to this idea.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very understandable. That's how this works. But as we continue to go here, as these technologies improve, as autonomous vehicles eventually become a real thing, they're still a fringy thing at this mm-hmm. point. as electric vehicles get better with better range and faster charging, with fewer, you know, less batteries on board, you know, as things change, more and more people are going to become accustomed to this idea.
I agree. And I can see me getting too accustomed, or I can see me getting accustomed to this idea. I mean, I like the idea. I'm just up for several reasons, not in a place where I can get rid of my car and rely on other services.
I take a more philosophical look at it. Like the waste of resources that I currently expend in owning my own car while driving it so little is shameful. So, you know, like I think about from a resource management standpoint, I want to get to the point where I'm comfortable with the idea of, you know, like being able to go, hey, S lady, get me a car. And then I walk outside and
that would be really cool.
I want to get to that point.
All right. How often do you have to put gas in your car?
Probably it's just over once a month.
Okay. That's good. And for me, it's more than I'm guessing typically it's probably about 6 weeks between when I fill up my tank. And a lot of times I'm filling it up, not because it's empty, but because it's low enough that I'm concerned about, like with temperature extremes, am I going to get condensation in the tank? So just make sure it's full. So I don't have to drive a lot.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So at least you and I are helping out in that respect, because we aren't polluting as much. Because our cars are sitting. I'm trying to make us both feel better about this.
Also, all right, have we solved that problem?
Yeah, I think we solved that problem.
Yeah. All right, sweet. I'm glad that we could solve that problem.
Me too. I think I'm going to sleep better tonight.
Yes, now that we have solved that problem.
Yeah. Anyhow. All right. Well, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Nope. Let's hit that button. Let's do it.
Wow. Holy crap. We're done in time to go out and party some.
Yes.
All right. Well, then I'm going to hit the button. Maybe. Let's try again.
You suck at hitting buttons.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but the great thing is I now have new letters in the script. So there's that. All right, let's try this again. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine, despite the fact that I can't hit the right buttons to make bumpers show up in shows. Anyhow, if you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And the trial was co-written by Bob Ezrin, the producer of that particular album. And that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
We will theoretically, maybe, if we understand, if we don't, see you online at the Mac Observer. Thank you.